Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Good morning.
Thought for today. I like me spiritually. We all think about liking yourself. We all think about how wonderful life is and how wonderful everything in life is. But do we really recognize what it means when we like ourselves spiritually? Do we recognize what it means when we say that we are spiritual? We have the physical, we have the mental, we have all other aspects of I liking me, but the spiritual idea of I like me is kind of unique. Now think of this. Throughout life, we give ourselves opportunities to be who we are. We give ourselves opportunities to stand up for who we are. We give ourselves opportunities to prove to ourselves who and what we are. And sometimes we do it easily, and sometimes we do it with difficulty. What sort of things have you done to prove to yourself who you are? What sort of tests have you given yourself? Well, the first test is that you were born. Now, here you are, a human being on planet Earth. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to cry? You're going to laugh? You're going to sing, dance? What are you going to do? Well, the little babies who laugh their way through childhood are rather remarkable beings. And the ones who cry their way through childhood are rather normal beings. And the ones who grump their way with illnesses and unhappiness in their world are the exception. The exception? Yes, the exception. If you have 100 people and one person has a problem, would you say that that was the norm, or that was average, or that was the thing that was ordinary? You'd say that's the exception, wouldn't you? Well, that's on the ratio of human beings who have problems. That's the exception. You read about things in the newspaper not because they are the norm, not because they are the ordinary thing, but because they are the exception. They are the out of the ordinary thing. The norm is to have a happy, peaceful, normal life. But you don't hear about that. You only hear in the soap operas about people who have problems, because that's more interesting. If they had stories about the Boy Scouts every day in the paper leading little old ladies across the street, why, that would be quite a boring thing, wouldn't it? If they had stories in the newspaper about how this husband came home after work and said to his wife, "I love you." What a boring, boring thing. And if this woman went out and bought a candle and brought it home and put it on the table, and she said to her husband when he came to the door, "I went out and bought a candle for our dinner together tonight." What a boring, boring thing. What an average thing. What a normal thing. What a thing that most people do. But you don't write about it. You don't read about it. It sounds great. When I talk about it like this, it sounds beautiful. But it's boring, because it's the normal. When you talk about somebody's illness, or somebody's problem, or somebody's unhappiness, or the marriage breaking up, they say 50% of the marriages break up. Well, there are no marriages. The only marriages that exist are the ones that were in heaven. That doesn't mean you're dead. It's the one in the higher state of consciousness, when two people feel very close and comfortable with one another. They don't get together just because they want sex. They don't get together just because they want to have children. They don't get together because they want to have a family together, or they want to share a house, or they want to share expenses. They get together because their hearts are talking to each other. They say, you know, we have similar interests. We have similar joy in one another's nature. We're not after each other's body. We're not after each other's presence. We're just after each other because I love you. I love you with this unconditional love, allowing you to be yourself and do anything that makes you happy. I have no control over you. I just love you. I love you like I love a tree. I don't say to the tree, "Come in the house and live with me." I let the tree be. I don't say to a dog, "You must not be a dog because I love you. I love you like a people." You love the dog as a dog. Well, you love another person as another person without any reservations, without any feeling of possession. A joy, yes, a delight, but no possession. Now, may I say to you, and will you listen, please? That is how most relationships on the face of the earth are. And 99% of those relationships are not married. The person you really love and you really delight in may be your child. It may be the man next door. It may be the woman down the street. It may be anyone. But you don't marry them because you cannot possess that which you love. You can only love that which you love. We see, now this is the test we give ourselves. The test of seeing whether our animal instincts of needing to copulate, or whether our animal instincts of needing to have a home, a nest, whether our animal instincts of survival are our reality, or whether love in its purest form is our reality. That's your test. Now, you're going to fail that test many times. You're going to want to possess another person, another thing, a dog, a cat. You're going to want to possess something in your life, and you fail. Love it. Love it with abandon. If you love your dog and your dog dies, you're not bereft. You're not in grief. You say, hey, cool, Pooch. Glad you were with me. Delighted in having you. Now you're going on to some other experience I don't know anything about. I bless you. Oh, why are you leaving? Why did you die? You're just a young pup. Why did you have to die? Why did you have to get run over? Hey, when you love something, you let it go. When you love something, you release it and let it be. Are you ready for that? Now you're asking yourself, what has this got to do with spirituality? I'll come to that. I'll come to that in a very big way in a few minutes. But just think now, we're giving ourselves tests all of our life, tests of our spirituality. Do we really believe that we're divine? If we're divine, we cannot possess it. Just think of a God outside of yourself, just for a moment. I know it's difficult, but think of that. Think of a God outside of yourself. If a God outside of yourself has the capacity in your consciousness to love everybody and everything, because it created everybody and everything, without reservation, without possession, oh, this is my favorite son, Jesus Christ, you know. Man, if I had a God who had one son more favored than another, I'd be a little leery of that God. Because that son would get all the goodies. I'd be sitting outside the door saying, God, can I have some too? I'm your son too. Just because I'm not your favorite son, you know. God, how do I become your favorite son? Well, you know how we become the favorite son? By recognizing that we're not a son. We're God. We're the creator of our world. Jesus pronounced that we're God. He said, ye are God. Every religion on the face of the earth teaches that you are God. That's why so many religions have so many gods. Not because they have the multiplicity of gods, but because everything is God. In Hindu teachings, they say God is everything. They say every man is God. Zarathustra taught that. He said, this little seed here, this is God teaching me. But I can learn from my presence of God in me, too, and reveal that. And the little boy or little girl in their crib, smiling and cooing and billing and cooing, whatever, and you go up to him and say, wow, what a neat little kid. And your heart just bubbles out over it. You don't want to possess them. You don't want to take them and clutch them and just eat them up. You sort of mentally want to eat them up. You think, oh, my goodness, that's a lovely little thing. But you just want to be close to something so free, so open, so beautiful. Needing nothing, having everything. The child is an infinite being, expressing itself right then. And you want to be part of that child. Another child cries and you shy away from it. Another child has problems messing in his diapers or something like that. You say, here's your kid, you know. But you see, when you love a child, the diapers don't smell. When you love a child, what normal things the child goes through in a perfectly happy way are not in any way unpleasant to you. When you love a tree, you don't say, damn you tree, dropping your leaves on my lawn. Let them blow away before they drop. They get a good wind up and blow them away. You don't say that. The dropping leaves, if we were to be honoring them, are fertilizer for the soil. They are a blanket on the soil. So when the cold winter winds come, the soil remains warm. The freeze is not so deep. Nature is so beautiful in all of its possibilities, and we damn it. We say, terrible flood, wonderful flood. We have taken away nature's opportunity to flow here and there because we want to put our houses up. And how many of you have put your house up on the edge of the ocean and had the ocean come and sweep it away, and then you damn the ocean? The ocean's business is to lap on the shore, is to be there. Your business, if you wish, is to put yourself out of harm's way. Go to a part of the ocean where you know it has never been swept into the sea, and where it is not going to be swept into the sea, and then build your house there, if you want to build your house by the sea. But use your wisdom, use your spiritual understanding, use your gift of understanding, your gift of peace, your gift of love. These are tests for you that you gave to yourself. Now, little sweetheart in her crib, laughing and crying, not crying, but laughing and singing and stuff like that, you say, what a wonderful child. She knows what she's doing. She doesn't care about you. She doesn't care about you. She cares about herself. She's singing to herself. She's smiling to herself. She's happy to herself. She knows that's the kind of life she wants to live. A happy, joyful, singing life. And then someone else cries, and they're crying to themselves. They're unhappy with life from the very get-go. They open their mouth, mwah! From the very beginning, it's their choice. Now, how did you start life? Did you start life with a smile on your face? I think so. That's why you're ready now to have that smile be broader and move into your spiritual perception of who you are. Think about it. Think about it. As I was floating in the pool this morning, I was thinking to myself, what an interesting thing to be marooned or in the middle of the ocean, be lost, without a life jacket, without a boat, and just float there. Now, you could gulp some water and drown quickly, but you don't. You seek to stay alive. You seek to float. You don't panic. You may have in the beginning, but you don't panic, because panic consistently would put you under right away. But you are peaceful. You relax. And you're floating in this gigantic ocean of nothingness. There's no ship. There's no airplane. There's no fish. There's no sharks. There's no whales, porpoises, or anything else. That's not in your thought. Your thought is one of two things. Will I live? Not will I be saved. Will I live or will I die? If you determine you're going to die, then you don't persist very long. You succumb to the water and sink beneath the waves. But if you say you're going to live, there's two stages of that too. One stage of living is that you just relax and you surround yourself with your pure white light of love, and you know this too shall pass, and you will be back on land again as you're accustomed to. Or stage two, which could be stage one, depends on what your attitude is. Some people call it stage one, some people call it stage two. It could be stage two, but it might be stage one too. But if it's stage one, it wouldn't be stage two, would it? This other stage is the stage of spiritual illumination and spiritual ascension. What? Do you think that every person who is left adrift in the ocean drowns or is found? Do you think that every body that exists on the face of the earth is either buried, cremated, or whatever? Exists somewhere? Yes, exists somewhere is right, but do you think that every being on the face of the earth must die and go into dust with their physical body? We've spoken of this before. The Missing Persons Bureau is filled with hundreds and thousands of people who are missing and never found. Are they all coming to a bad end? Are they all running away from their lifestyle? Or have many of these people reached that level of consciousness that they ascend? And I rather think that's the case. And I know that's the case. You see, this is what spiritual I like me is. Spiritual I like me is where you prepare yourself for immortality. You prepare yourself for living eternally. You prepare yourself with little tests. The little tests of panic. When you see your car out of control, oh my God, we're going to die! Or you say, all is in divine order. And all is in divine order. Where are you on the level of testing yourself? Are you at the stage of panic, where you think you have no control? Or are you at the stage of recognizing that you're God? You're the creator of your world. You created this little incident that you're giving yourself, and you're the master of it, and everything is in order. All is in divine order. Can you say all is in divine order when anything comes up in your life that seems distressing? That'd be a challenge, wouldn't it? Anytime anything comes up in your life, you say, all is in divine order. Have you ever done that? I know I have done that, and I have had many wonderful experiences with that. And I've told you many of them. These experiences are fantastic experiences. Aboard our ship during the war, we had many very difficult circumstances. These people who tell you about Agent Orange and other terrible things that are met on the battlefield, listen to them. Listen to them as they tell it. Listen to them as they get the government to give them money to make up for the thing that they did in serving their country. They should not get, they'll kill me if they read this, they should not get any money for having served their country and having taken anything that was difficult for them to take. When a person is killed in service by an enemy bullet, does the government send money to the family and say, your son was shot serving his country? No, they send you an American flag and they say, your son was shot serving his country, an honor to his nation. That's it. But if they have some difficulty, then right away they want the government to help them pay for it. Well, Herb, you didn't have any difficulties, didn't I? Was I not there among all the rest of them? Where many of them went bonkers, mentally berserk, because the circumstances were very testing. When a kamikaze airplane comes down on your aircraft carrier, it could be the end. It was the end for many. But our ship was always surrounded by my pure white light of love. We burned off our deck occasionally, but we'd go and have liberty in Pearl Harbor for 6 weeks while they put a new deck back. Ta-da-ta-da! Away from the war for 6 weeks. Other people said, "Oh my God, my God, my..." I said, "Hey." I was reading Unity at the time. I said, "Surround this with your pure white light of love. And surround each one of your bullets with pure white light. They don't have to kill anybody. They can just scare people away and say, 'I don't want to get near those bullets.'" And they don't have to get shot. They go, poof, away they go. It doesn't matter whether they're kamikaze pilots, meaning that they give their life to get their plane on target. The plane can go a different direction. You don't have to blow them up. You don't have to take one life on the face of this earth, not one ant, what, not one gnat, not one bacteria, not one anything. Because you are pure love. You are the child that smiled in the crib. You are the person who is in charge of your life. You are a delight to your world, the only world there is. And if you think that you're in my world, you're silly. I know you're in my world, for me. But I'm only in your world. You're not in my world, for you. You're creating me as a very loving, gentle character, or you're creating me as a very tough taskmaster. You create me whatever you want me to be. On board our ship, I was just 18. Wet behind the ears. Never had any experiences with sex, never had any experiences with love, never had any experiences with problems. I lived in a normal community, in a normal relationship, with normal world, with normal experiences. And I didn't have any of those. And here I was thrust among all of these devastating experiences where people got diseases and people got shot and people got bullets in them. People got all sorts of things. And some of them were my friends, and I'd go to see them, and I'd say, "Man, you're looking good. You're wonderful. You'll be out of here in no time. You know, you're fantastic. You're home perfect." I didn't say it quite that strongly, "You're home perfect," because that's just a recent addition to my vocabulary. But I told them, you're home. You're perfect. You're wonderful, you know. And they got up and walked away. I didn't heal them. But I gave them the opportunity to think that they were whole and perfect, and they took it. You have the opportunity to be spiritually magnificent in a spiritually magnificent body, a spiritually magnificent world, by just saying to yourself, "I am spiritually whole and I like me." How many times a day do you say, "I like me"? I know you're going to say to me, "Well, Herb, you're always asking that question," and I'm going to continue asking that question. And pretty soon, it won't irritate you anymore, because you'll be asking it of yourself. You'll be saying, "I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect. I like me, I like me, I like me." And you see, when it becomes your second nature to say, "I like me," then when I say, "You're not saying I like me enough," you'll say, "That's right, I should say it a few more times. I like it." When I see the things that happen in my life because I say, "I like me," wow. And when I like me spiritually, I'm thinking even on a higher level. I'm not just thinking of the cars and the people and the friends. I'm thinking of my divine reality. I'm thinking of my thoughts that are so pure and so gorgeous and so desirable. Thoughts of love, not possession, not control, not condition. My thoughts are unconditional love. Oh, yes. You play your games. See, I love you the way you play your games. I do that too. You play your games, and you confuse the relative with the absolute. And that's okay. You go ahead. But let me suggest to you, if you prick a Jew, does he not bleed? Yes. If I prick you, do you not bleed? You're still quite human. I will train you in the ways of mysticism, train you in the ways of Hindu mastership, if you wish, so that you could lie in a bed of nails and they poke your body and you don't even bleed. Or if you bleed, you say, up, and instantly the pricks are gone. At the Menier Foundation, we learned how to do these things. We saw these things done. Fabulous, stupid things. I mean, fabulous things, you know. But they're just tricks. They're just little games to divert you from the fact that everything is thought. Everything is your thought. Why does the biblical scripture say, 10,000 may fall on thy right hand and 1,000 on the left, but nothing shall come nigh unto thee who believeth in the Lord? Now, what Lord do you believe in? The Lord inside of you? Or do you believe in a God outside of you? I tell you, you believe in a God outside of you, you're going to be working all the time. You're going to be working all the time. But once God has possession of you inside, the word possession isn't necessarily too good there, but once you are the oneness of God, the universality of God, you'll never seek outwardly again. You'll only look within your heart. Sylvia had a good time playing with the word monastery and someone else's interpretation of monasteries and saying how they're not necessary and things like that. Well, they're not. But yet they are. The monastery is the most important entity in the universe because it's the Stefan Monastery, the Sapphire Monastery, the Ellen Monastery, the Irene Monastery, the Sylvia Monastery, the Ingeborg Monastery, the Anita Monastery, the Klaus Peter Monastery, the John Monastery. Have you ever seen those monasteries? Are those monasteries vehicles of the living expression of divinity? Are those monasteries wonderful? Mm-hmm. Now let's think about this. You are not drowning in the ocean. But if you were drowning in the ocean, what would you like to do? Die? I mean, you put yourself in this rather opportunistic situation, the situation where you can die or you can live. Would you like to die and drown? It's very simple. People do it all the time. Or do you want to live eternally, immortally, ascend? If you want to live eternally, immortally, and ascend, you cannot think about drowning. You can only think about life everlasting. You can only think about your thought is the creator of your world. And so if your thought says, I'm whole and perfect, you don't leave your body floating in the ocean. It comes with you. There's nothing for mankind to find left behind, bones, teeth. It goes with you. Even your wristwatch. They say you can't take it with you. They don't know about ascension. When you ascend, you don't ascend naked. You could. But you ascend with everything you are. Some say you leave your clothing behind, your watch behind, everything, and you just go with what you came with. But you ascend just the way you are. And you're not uncomfortable. If you're uncomfortable in heaven naked, then you won't be naked. If you're comfortable anywhere you are naked, then you'll be naked. It just depends on what you are. Wherever you are possessed. So, I like me spiritually. Is a wonderful game. And that's all it is. It's a game. It's part of the game of being yourself and having fun. And that's what you're here for. to be yourself and have fun. And I'm here to recommend that you follow that way and have a lot of fun too. I love you.